This is an interview taken for the Western Sydney Women's Oral History Project, From Farms to Freeways, Women's Memories of Western Sydney. This interview is taken with Mrs. Margaret Taylor of 10 Lonsdale Street, St. Mary's, and the date is the 25th of November 1991.
My name is Margaret Taylor. I live at 10 Lonsdale Street, St. Mary's. I was born on the 23rd of February 1932 in Bradford, Yorkshire, England, which makes me English.
So, what year did you come to Australia?
1949.
And where did you settle?
At Kingswood, at Connell Street, on the corner of the Great Western Highway and Connell Street, not far from the University of Western Sydney as it is now.
Right. And you lived there with your parents?
Yes, for 12 months.
Right. And then where did you move to?
We moved to Mount Druitt, which was where the main road to Mount Druitt Shopping Centre is now. I just can't think of the name of the road.
Right.
Actually, they demolished our house to build the road.
Oh, did they?
Yes. Mm.
And was that a house your parents built?
It was a house my parents built, mm-hmm. Yes.
what sort of work did your father do?
My father was a very interesting person. He was originally a tribe dresser, which you probably don't have any people like that in Australia, but in Yorkshire it was quite common. He had tribe shops all over Yorkshire, and people used to buy them as we buy fish and chips in Australia and eat them in paper, just like you do in Australia's fish and chips.
Mm.
And he had a restaurant, and when he came to Australia, he went to work for the railways as a telephone technician. He'd studied radio and telephones and all that kind of thing in the army during the war. Mm. So he decided to start afresh when he came out here and have a new career. So he worked for the railways until he retired at 75, which would have been in 1976.
Right. Mm. And so you lived most of your childhood in Mount Druitt, did you?
No. Well, I was 18.
Oh, when you arrived
here.
Yes,
when I arrived here.
Right.
So I spent all my...
all your single years.
Yes, my single years in Mount Druitt.
Mm-hmm.
Went to work in St. Mary's as a telephonist,
mm-hmm.
with the PMG, as it was then.
Oh, did you?
Mm-hmm.
So you were in communications too,
yes.
Like father, like daughter.
Yes. Well, I'd always been interested in, as a child, in telephones and telephonists,
mm-hmm.
and I thought, oh, that would be an interesting job to do. And I left school at a very early age. I left school at 14. I'd had no high school education or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I applied for a position, and I was given like a temporary position because I had to sit for an exam to become a permanent telephonist.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very, very strict in those days. And I managed to get through the exam, and I was appointed a permanent telephonist. And I worked there for 8 years until my marriage.
Hmm. And so what year were you married?
1957.
So you didn't move here until
1957, yes,
right.
When we built this house.
Mm-hmm. So we might talk about the Mount Druitt area a little bit as well. When you first moved there with your family, what was the area like?
Well, it was a little bit more particular area we lived was on the southern side of the railway, so it was quite a little village there. Mm-hmm. And everybody knew everybody, and we sort of got involved in all sorts of things like amateur theatricals. We formed a theatrical company, because there was nothing of that type of thing anywhere around this area at that particular time. And
did you start that up?
My father did, mm-hmm. and myself. When we left England, we'd been involved in just about everything, and in musicals, opera, dramatic things, you know, mm-hmm. and we sort of missed it terribly, mm. because we felt we'd come to an old saying, a cultural desert.
Yes.
There was nothing, there was nowhere to go. There was only the picture theatre, and we wanted something better than that. Mm. Yeah. So we decided to form our own theatrical group called the Mount Drew Players.
Oh, yes.
Mm. And we did all sorts of things, like excerpts from operas and operettas, and sketches. And, it was like a review types of thing. And we were so popular with the audiences around there.
It's not still going today, I suppose.
Mm. No. I don't think that sort of thing's as popular now as what it was then. Mm.
And so where you lived, did you have a lot of neighbours, or was it...
Yes, we were very close, all very close, and we all got on very well. Mm-hmm. And there's quite a mixture of nationalities, because at that period there was a lot of migrants in 1949. So we had quite a lot of different nationalities all around us.
Such as? What sort of?
Well, particularly German. Mm-hmm. There seemed to be a predominance of mm-hmm. German people at Mount Drew, as there is here in St Mary's. There was a few from Yugoslavia, I think. And... there's a couple of Italians too, close by.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and when you say you were close to neighbours, did you mean physically close?
We were physically close, yes. And you know, we all got on mm-hmm. very well. Mm-hmm. I think because we had this common bond, this experience, yes. of being migrants, mm-hmm. too. And although we were British migrants, I suppose we felt just the same as they did.
Just as
alienated. At least we could speak the language, which was one great thing.
Yes.
Except that we all had terrible Yorkshire accents in those days. In fact, I can remember the first few weeks I went to work at the telephone exchange. There was a very irate man rang up one day and said, "Who's that bloody commie?"
Really?
He was quite angry. He didn't like the idea of this accent.
Mm-hmm.
So it was terrible.
And did you, when you moved to Mount Drew, your parents built the house there? So
yes, they built a house.
What sort of house was it?
It was quite a big house. My father wanted to have rehearsals. in at the house, mm. so he built this huge lounge room, which was, I'd say, in feet, it was probably about 30 by 24.
Really?
So it was quite a huge room, and then we had the about three bedrooms, I think, and lounge room, dining room. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was quite a big. And in those days, you didn't have sewage, of course. You had the old toilet
down the back. Mm-hmm. Put your umbrella up in the rain.
Which was a cultural shock to us, because we'd never experienced anything like that.
No.
I mean, we're city people. We came from the city, so we didn't even know those things existed still.
And this really was country in those days.
Oh, it was. It was very much country. We found We found the trees and all the bush very strange, and we didn't like it. We thought it was horrid.
Did you?
Yes. After the lush greens of England, it was hard to take. Mm. Everything seemed so dry. Oh, it was awful.
And did you feel lonely or isolated at all?
Not really. It wasn't so much that we missed people so much as things that we'd been used to. Like, as I said, we were so much into all these theatrical things, and it was mainly this cultural sort of thing, you know. It wasn't so much that we didn't have friends and we didn't meet a lot of people and that. So we weren't lonely in that sense. It was just that we missed all the things that we loved.
Yes, including the cold Christmases. And
that's right, yes. And of course the greenness and the, you know, all those lovely things. So we thought, and we couldn't see anything nice about the Australian bush.
What was the landscape like around your home? Was it very built up, or was there a lot
of
bush?
It was very built up where we were at that particular time, even though it was, you know, quite in the early 50s. And but all around it was the bush, and there used to be quite a lot of bushfires at that particular time, which was another thing that we had to face up to, and things like snakes and strange spiders and
terrifying.
It was really, it was very, I mean, we didn't get off to a really good start with Australia. I mean, we eventually grew to love it, and we do love the trees now. But it just seems so strange. Yeah. But it was just a matter of getting adjusted and trying to be a bit more positive about things. I think a lot of people, and I think Australians are a bit the same, you're always inclined to think about, we used to do this and we used to have that in England, whereas you don't have it in Australia, you know.
You thinking about things a bit.
Yes, yes, everything seems larger than life, you know. You can't see the good points.
And did your house have a lot of land around it? Did you have a garden?
We had a double block, which would be like the twice the size of this block we're on, which was in feet, I think, about 50 by 120 feet. But it was double that size. So it was quite, and we had, my mother had a beautiful garden. She did a lot of gardening, but they were all European people.
Were they?
She wouldn't grow. She wouldn't grow any Australian. Well, Australian natives weren't popular in those days. No. You didn't grow them.
Mm.
You know, if you wanted to see the Australian natives, you went out the bush. You know, you didn't. It just wasn't done. Even Australians didn't learn. You know.
No.
I mean, it's very popular now.
Yes.
We're getting back to that.
And. Did your father grow vegetables or?
Yes, he did. He used to grow quite a lot. He used to complain terribly about things like potatoes, because there's nothing like Irish potatoes. And so he used to try and grow his own, but they weren't any better than the stuff we bought in the shop, really. Just a different soil.
Yes. And did your mother shop from home? How did she manage the shopping? Did she have deliveries?
Well, she'd always had deliveries in England, but here in Australia they used to go, because they had a car. It was one of the first things they got was a car, because we'd always had a car at home. So that was one of the first things my father got was a car. Realising how isolated we were and how cut off we'd be if we didn't have a car. And they used to go shopping together once, twice a week. They used to go to Blacktown, can remember quite a lot. And if my mother wanted to do any special shopping, like clothing or anything like that, she used to go to Parramatta.
Mm.
And that was the big thing there. I'm trying to think what they called what now is Grace Brothers. I can't remember what it was called in those days. Was it Grace
Farmers?
Brothers? No, it was
before that.
Or was it Grace Brothers? It might have been Grace Brothers. They had a big department store there, and that was her favourite shop. She loved that shop. But she used to get all the special things there. And we used to go into Sydney to concerts, symphony concerts and operatic stuff and plays and all that sort of thing. So we did quite a lot of travelling. It was all by steam train.
Mm, to find the entertainment.
To find the entertainment, yes. We used to come home. When you went to Sydney in those days, in the 1950s, and probably in the 60s as far as I can remember, you always wore a hat. You always wore white gloves. And, I mean, you really dressed up. And you'd come home and you'd be absolutely filthy because of the steam trains. You know, your gloves would be black. But we used to love that. It was a real ritual. It was a ritual because every young girl, unmarried girl, would be there with her hat and white gloves and yards of petticoats, you know, starch petticoats, because that was the fashion in the 50s. And used to love doing that. But everything was much more formal. As far as dress and that was concerned, everybody had to conform, you know. Nowadays you wear what you like.
Mm.
And but in those days, if you bought a dress, you brought it home and immediately measured the hem, the length of thread from the floor to the hem, to make sure that it was the required number of inches from the floor, because people didn't wear any length skirts, you all wore the same.
Mm-hmm.
And the newspapers used to say, this year's skirts will be so many inches from the floor. Mm-hmm. And you'd immediately get your dresses out and alter them to suit the lengths.
Fashion dictated.
I talk to people about this sometimes and they look at me as if I'm a bit odd, you know. But we really did those things. And you wore the right kind of hats and the right kind of gloves and all that sort of thing. So.
And did you work in the city?
I worked in St Mary's.
In St Mary's at the
time. I worked at the St Mary's Telephone Exchange. Mm-hmm. It was a very busy telephone exchange. It was supposed to be the busiest country because we were classed as country by telephones.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else, we were metropolitan, but the telephone exchange was country,
mm-hmm.
which meant that we were the busiest country exchange in the whole of New South Wales,
mm-hmm.
because you see we serviced the munition area. There's a lot of factories over mm-hmm. there, St Mary's Telephone factory area. And it was extremely busy. We must have had, I think, about 24 telephonists. Not 24 telephonists, 24 switchboards. There was about 8 in the main telephone exchange, which was a very old brick building that used to be down there on the highway. And then there was they'd built a sort of a wooden structure. And they had the rest of the switchboards in there, which were the automatic telephones. They were the first automatic telephones in New South Wales.
And were there a lot of women employed there?
All women.
All women?
All women.
Mm-hmm.
There was only two men that worked there, but they worked overnight, at night.
Mm-hmm.
See, the telephone exchange closed down at, I think, 10 o'clock, but there was a man slept there. And if there was any emergencies or anything, he was there to, you know, nice. Connect people through. And then it opened again at 6 a.m. in the morning.
So. And what was St. Mary's like in those days?
St. Mary's was completely different to what it is now. The shopping centre was down at the highway. It wasn't down Queen Street as it is now. Queen Street was completely full of houses. And there was the shops that are right at the railway now, opposite the railway steps were there then, that block of shops. And then across the road there was the other block of shops that are there at the moment. And then they built a Woolworths store, which is where Lachlan's is now.
A Woolworths store, did you say?
There was a Woolworths. They built the Woolworths. That was built as a Woolworths store. And now it's Rockman's, but that was probably in the middle 50s, I think, they built that building there. And then from there onwards, it was all houses.
Was it?
Yeah, all houses. And as I said, the main shopping centre was in Queen Street. Not Queen Street, Victoria Street, as they called it. That is the Western
Highway.
Highway
now.
There was... just where Mammy Road is now, coming down towards Penrith, there was a block of shops, and there was one shop. It was a very, very old building, and they used to have a great turnover of people. You never knew what was going to be there next. It just seemed to have all sorts of people moving in there from antique shops and... Maybe clothing shops or something like that. But next to that was Sandy Lang, who was a greengrocer. And he used to sell milkshakes. He sold me my first milkshake. And he was the fire chief, because they only had volunteer fire brigades in those days. And his shop was very popular. He used to sell, he had the milk bar on one side and the greengrocery on the other. And I thought that was really quaint, because I'd never seen a milk bar before.
And they were really popular in the 50s, weren't they?
Oh, these milkshakes and ice creams. We loved that. And then there was, I know, there was nothing else. The next building was the Masonic Lodge. It was next to that. And then next to that was the... I've got to get this right. The Presbyterian Church.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
And then next to that was the outbuilding of the Telephone Exchange. And then there was the post office, which was a brick building, and that was, the Telephone Exchange was behind that, behind the rear of the post office. And if we worked on Sundays, we used to hear the church service from the Presbyterian Church. And that's the church I got married in, actually.
Oh, was it? And I suppose most of those buildings have gone now.
They've all gone.
Including the church.
Yes, including the church, which is a great pity. Then there was, across the road, there was an old building which was practically dilapidated at that stage. This is in the early 50s. And it had a doctor upstairs, Dr. Renshaw, Morris Renshaw. He started his practice there. And then there was Ian Ricks, who used to have a store in St. Mary's in the main street until just recently. He started his business there on the corner, and it was like going into his shop was like going into a gypsy caravan. He had all sorts of things hanging up, you know, saucepans and ribbons and laces and clothing, and it was a fascinating shop, you know. It was a was like a disposal store, only a bit more romantic than that.
So you must have noticed a lot of change in this area.
Oh, gosh,
at
yes.
At Mount Druitt,
yes.
In that time.
Yes, we have. Mm-hmm. Actually, Mount Druitt's probably been a bit luckier than St Mary's because it's still got the hall where they still show films today, where we used to, community hall, I think it's called. It's still standing. They've managed to preserve it.
Oh, it's a little timber hall, is it?
Yes, yes. Melrose was at Union Plains. And which I think was really good, you know, that we've got something.
So it must. How do you feel about all those landmarks having disappeared, particularly ones that are associated with your earlier memories and the church you were married in and that sort of thing?
I think it's sad that the churches have gone because there was also the Methodist Church in Queen Street too, which was directly opposite Chapel Street. It just seems a pity that, you know, those buildings have gone, you know. But,
and the area's become more built up after the war. People moved out here in droves. And
yes, I think the biggest upheaval was when they built the housing estate at Mount Druitt.
Mm-hmm.
It caused a lot of resentment around this area because, you know, the old established people didn't like the idea of no-hopers, as they call them, coming into this area because they felt they were worse than the migrants, you know. That's the way they felt, you know, because they were down and out. A lot of them were down and out and they moved out for the cheaper housing, but it did cause a lot of friction.
Did you live near the estate?
No, we were on the southern side, like the old Mount Druitt village, as it is today.
Yes.
And the other side was the was the housing area, 57.
So, in 1957...
When we got married, we got married. We decided, we had a few problems. We were trying to decide where we were going to live, and we went all over the place looking at blocks of land and things. And when we came up here to look at this block of land, there was nothing. There was no housing. It was all paddocks.
Yeah.
And there was two houses in this street.
Really?
And at the top of the street, on the left-hand side, I should say on the northern side, of Lonsdale Street, was a sale yards. It had been the sale yards for the area. This and people used to come from Liverpool and Camden to the St Mary's sale yards.
Oh.
But they'd closed down. I don't know what year they closed down, but it mustn't have been not long before we came because there was still the fencing, you know, and then shortly after 1957 they removed all that and then they started dividing up the land.
Mm-hmm. And so you built this house yourself, did you?
Oh, well, it was built for us by some firm.
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember who now.
And it's a fibro house, is it? Or
it was originally fibro, but it's got the cladding on it now.
Right.
So we updated it.
Mm-hmm. And this is a normal quarter-acre block, I presume, is it?
Yes.
And what is it, three bedrooms or...?
Two.
Two bedrooms.
Two.
Mm-hmm. And when you moved here, did you find it hard to... Did you build straight away when you were married?
Oh, yes, yes. Mm. We moved in after we were married.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you find it hard to get building materials or anything?
No problems. No, they just came.
Right.
I think they took about 3 months to build it.
To build it?
Yeah.
Mm. And so when you lived with your parents, what sort of electrical appliances and that sort of thing did your mother have?
My mother was very modern.
Was she?
Very modern. So she had everything she could lay her hands on. In fact, she was one of the first women in Yorkshire to have an electric sewing machine, which she bought in 1932. And a lot of Australians say to me, your mother didn't have a sewing machine in 32. They didn't weren't invented then. But they were, I can assure you, because she used to make all their dresses.
Did she?
So she had everything that was up to date. And my father was a bit of a... he'd go down, say to Grace Brothers at one of the big stores, and they'd be demonstrating these new electrical things, and he's very impulsive. He used to buy everything, you know. So now my mother had everything she wanted.
And so did you have refrigerators and vacuum cleaners and toasters, all those sort of things?
I mean, she'd had it all in England, and, you know, she couldn't live without them. She'd have them all alive.
Yeah. And when you moved here to live, did you have the same appliances?
No, we were poor.
So how did you manage?
Well, I just had to learn to manage without them, you know, because we didn't want to put ourselves in any debt or anything. Mm-hmm. So I just happily went along and didn't think anything of it, you know. I was quite content. In fact, I rather enjoyed doing